6 for the meeting today at Warwick Farm. So rail through, it's a heavy 9, 5.96. A little bit of rain, about 3.5 mil of rain overnight, just nuisance value really, and enough to keep it in that heavy range. It's right on 10 o'clock, and this is Sky Sports Radio.
Charlo's Pies, 100% Australian lean Aussie beef and bursting with flavour in all Coles and IGA stores. If you can't find them, ask for Garlo's by name. The difference with Garlo's is the deliciously flaky pastry on top and a bottom which is rolled extra thin, giving you more meat and less fat.
Hey, Mum, don't forget the Garlo's.
And don't forget me, Darls.
You tell them, kiddo. At Garlo's Pies,
we're thin on pastry, we're big on meat.
Win more with the $5 million Inglis Race Series for horses sold or passed in at the 2015 Inglis Yearling Sales. Lucrative prize money in New South Wales and Victoria for Inglis graduates across two-year-old, three-year-old and four-year-old racing seasons. Features include the $500,000 two-year-old Inglis nursery on Villiers Day. Nominations close July 31. For more information, visit inglis.com.au. You've got to be in it to win it.
On the Big Sports Breakfast with TK and Slab.
Blues captain Paul Gallen talks about the attention surrounding the selection of Robbie Farah for Origin 3.
Plus, if he tries, gets named, and Michael Innes doesn't get named for New South and plays for Cronulla and gets suspended, then Michael's available to play for Game 3. So, is this your idea? Was this your brainstorm?
Mate, I heard about this last night on the Matty John show, and, yeah, this story is going around at the moment, and if Farrah's no good and this can happen, well, I suppose, you know, they're not breaking any rules, and that's just the way it is. But I don't know. I really don't know. It's just, you need your hooker in there training with the side, so we'll have to wait to see how it all pans out.
The Big Sports Breakfast with TK and Slab. Weekday mornings from 5:30 on Sky Sports Radio and Sky Racing 1. Brought to you by TAB.
Are you looking to buy or sell a thoroughbred? Maybe a broodmare, tried racehorse or even a yearling? Look no further than bloodstockauction.com, Australia's first 100% online auction. Horses go under the hammer from 7 p.m. the first and third Tuesday of every month. Catalogue available 5 days prior. Trading horses has never been easier. Log on and become a member today. Access to Bloodstock worldwide. bloodstockauction.com, delivering the sales ring to you.
Starter has the button, stalls are back and racing. Fields sent on their way to the roar of the crowd.
Set.
They're off. On your racing and sports leader, Sky Sports Radio, it's time for Tab Talk. With the very latest in racing and sport from around the country, welcome to Tab Talk.
10:02 at Sky Sports Radio with Sean Cosgrave and from tab.com.au. Nick Quinn, morning Quinny.
Very good morning to you. Can't wait to have a chat to our guest today. One of the greatest jockeys I've seen, whose legacy continues on now through his son. Rode two of the best horses I've ever seen. And is there a more commonly barroom discussion of who's a better horse than Northerly and Sunline? Which camp do you sit in, Cosy?
Probably Northerly, I reckon.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
I think he was as tough as teak, but this man will be able to settle the argument. Greg Giles. Good morning, Greg.
Morning, Sean. Morning, Nick.
Okay, who was the better? Northerly or Sunline, Greg?
I Sunline.
Sunline? Ooh. Oh, I didn't...
No mucking around here. Yeah, I think Sunline was, and the reasons are Sunline raced left-handed, right-handed. She travelled to three different countries and won, New Zealand, Australia and Hong Kong. And she was very versatile. Whenever she was accepted, she never scratched. She was a real champion.
That was probably Northerly's little chink in the armour, wasn't it? That he never did win in Sydney and was beaten a few times as a very short price favourite. So if he only raced in the Victorian way of going, you'd say he was a superstar. But yeah, did have a couple of defeats, but... What does it mean to you that even all these years down, people, every time your name is mentioned, obviously people want to talk about these champion horses, horses that help get so many into the racing game and whatnot. It must be humbling and exciting that people still get so excited talking about them.
You're right, Nick. It does. You know, and that's what we lack today is a real superstar. We're black caviar, but we need another one very soon. Hopefully we'll get one this spring. They do attract the interest, the TV interest, the crowd, and they all love to go and see a great spectacle. But, yeah, it's great that I rode. I was very fortunate to throw my leg onto Sunline through one thing or another, how it came about. And I was very fortunate. It turned out to be, you know, a career deciding move, and just, as I tell people, it not only lifted my profile, she lifted my bank balance as well.
Now, of the two of them, which one did the crowds react to the most?
Look, and what you said, Nick and Sean, Northerly was a great horse, and he's proven that. Two Cox Plates, Caulfield Cup, Australia Cup. He was very dominant, very good, good to watch, because it was very difficult to get past, and very similar to Sunline, but Northerly did beat Sunline at Moonee Valley twice. So, you know, she's got the wood over him there. But for my reasons, what I said before, I rate Sunline a bit higher than Northerly for those reasons, that she did race left-handed and right-handed and did travel.
Yeah, and that was the little, as I mentioned, the little chink in Northerly, that he did go up to Sydney, and he was beaten in the Ranford as $1.40, then ran unplaced in the Manion at $1.75, and then ran second in the BMW at $1.45. So that's probably, if he had gone up and won those three, maybe you might look differently. But obviously Freemason just pipped him that day in that infamous, well, I can say infamous because the champion got beaten. But I've never heard a louder cheer at Caulfield than when he held on in that Caulfield Cup in 2002, because the crowd, he was $5.50, and I know the punt's not everything, but it is great when people can have a bet on these champions and not take Black Caviar odds. I mean, $5.50 on the champ, and he had such a big weight, 58 kilos. It was such a brave win. He looked gone before the turn, Greg, but you got everything out of him, and he held on.
Yeah, and Fields of Omar was coming from the clouds late with Damien Oliver, and Northerly, like his true style of fashion, just dogged it right to the line, never gave up, went down fighting, and he held on to win.
And how hard was it to jump off him onto Sunline then for the Cox Plate a week later?
Look, Mick, that was a fairly easy decision, because if I didn't ride Sunline in that Cox Plate, there would have been blood in the family. It would have been my blood.
You would never have ridden her again.
My wife, my mum and dad from New Zealand, there's no way I could get off Sunline. She'd been too good to me. But Trevor McKee did offer me to get off Sunline if I wanted to ride Northerly after I rode Northerly in the Caulfield Cup. But I says, no, I'm sticking true. And she got beat, but I'm happy.
She still ran a big race, and I think it's fair to say she was a little bit past her best at that stage, but she still went enormous in that Cox Plate.
Yeah, she was on the way down, but her form was good leading into that race. But, yeah, there was the young gun coming up through the ranks, and that was Northerly, and he was too good.
Now, Greg, your son Jordan's riding these days. How involved was he in racing, or what was his interest level at that point when you were riding Sunline and Northerly? What age would he have been then?
They were about seven, eight.
Yeah.
Five or six. Jordan's living his dream today. He's always wanted to be a jockey. He was practicing the star jump off the pony when he first started out. So he's living his dream, and he's progressing well. It's tough out there. There's a lot of champion riders, apprentices and riders out there, and it's very competitive. It's probably the most competitive. I mean, Sydney say it's most competitive racing in the world, or in Australia. But for apprentices, I would say Melbourne is the most competitive. And that's not a bad thing, because it strives the apprentices to go better. So going back to your question, yeah, Jordan's always wanted to be a jockey, and he started Pony Club and his sister Taylor when they were four or five on the little Shetland pony called Happy, and it progressed from there.
Now, the other thing with Melbourne too, this time of year, Greg, with the wet tracks, they don't mind throwing the apprentices on the 3 kilo claimers, do?
No, that's dead right, Sean, and hence that's why there's a lot of apprentices in town coming from all over, not only Australia but New Zealand as well. So the competition is very strong. It's very healthy. It can only, you know, it pushes the young kids harder. And as I keep telling Jordan, I mean, you just got to look at the top riders and everything they do, because they didn't get to the top for being lazy or not committed.
The irony is, I think Jordan's apprenticed to a gentleman who rode Northerly against you, Patrick Payne.
Yes, that's right. Jordan started his riding track work for Patrick when he was about 12, and he became apprentice to Patrick Payne. But right now he's on loan to Lee Freeman at Flemington.
Yeah, that's good.
And just wanted to spend 3 months in the city during the winter months here to try and get more exposure to the city trainers. He's doing well. Working through the process. He used to really listen to me a lot when he was younger, but as he's got older, it's got harder to convince him that old school is sometimes the right way to go. But he's got to find his own way in life, and he's doing well.
Do you sit down and go through tapes with him?
I did, but he's now moved out, and he's living with a jockey, Dean Holland. And he wanted to be a bit more independent, and that's fine. And we still go through rides. He's got to find his own way. I mean, I can't hold his hand. Like every parent, they've got to find their own way in life. And sure, if I see something very obvious, I point it out. And likewise, if he does something really good. But, I'm hesitant to get too involved now. I did early doors, but you've got to step away at some stage.
Basically, you've got to let him fly, haven't you?
Yeah. And he's with, as I said, Patrick Payne's been terrific. He's given him lots of opportunities, and he's won lots of races. He's with Lee. He's not long been with Lee. We're hoping some doors might open there. Darren Weir has been is one of his main supporters. As I said, Patrick Payne's given him a lot of pointers. Yeah. But there's lots of other riders out there too that they all help each other, and they're more than. And I know when I was riding, the older jockeys are more than happy to help young apprentices.
Just one sec, Greg. Hat trick, race one.
Racing. Don't Muzzle Me was slow, and very slow was Casual Surfer on the inside here. Homebush Inquiry sharing out the speed was Lily Mars Smoking and Blue Moving. Don't Muzzle Me's trying to fight a way through Chart. Getting a charge through on the inside, Big Time Rant, and another Pearl's making up ground around the outside in a very rough race. Well back in the piece for Sammy McFallon. Casual Surfer down they come, and Big Time Rant has got through and scored nicely from another Pearl. Third to go by then, probably Blue Moving from Lily Mars Smoking was close up. The rest of them finished in pretty much a ruck with Homebush Inquiry. Don't Muzzle Me, who blew it at the start and found trouble thereafter. Casual Surfer Sammy McBell.
465 there over the line. Number 4, Big Time Ransom, $642. 6 another Pearl, $1.45. Blue Moving, $420. 4, 6, and 5 over the line to a hat trick.
We're talking to former superstar jockey Greg Childs here. And now, Greg, obviously with
you playing that up well, Nick.
Well, that was the contract.
He's
on a sling.
Having a look through your resume, I couldn't describe you any other way. It'd be simply disrespectful. I was one of those people cheering their hearts out for Northley as well on that particular day, so you're still in the good books. But it must have been a big thrill to watch Jordan win the Murray Bridge Cup aboard Excites the Lady, probably his biggest win to date so far last year, and obviously on such a big day, huge crowd there, big field, and he did everything right.
Yes, that's right. He did, and it was a great day. It was a great day for Jordan. That was a tragic day for racing. There was the death of the young apprentice girl rider. Her name escapes me at the moment. But, so for that race, that was a great day for Jordan. And Jordan won recently a cup race, Eden Hope Cup, on one of Darren Weir's. So, he's chalking up a couple of country cups. He's won the another cup race when he first started out, early doors, Witchy Proof Cup. So, he's getting a few cups on the board. He's muscling them in between my two Cox plates. but hey, I'm picking them out. You've got to get your own trophy cabinet, buddy. He's doing well. As I said, it's tough, competitive. A lot of good apprentices out there. I mean, the Victorian Jockeys Association, or the Victorian Racing, do a terrific job in educating these young apprentices coming through the ranks and trying to put them on the right path. And we just look at Bo Mertens, who was over in France just the other day, and he rode at a treat, stayed up and watched it, and Jessica Payne the year before that. So there are opportunities for young kids. Prize money's great. The money's good for an apprentice jockey. When you come out of your apprenticeship, you could easily have enough money to buy a deposit or put down a deposit for a new house. And if you're Patrick Maloney, you could buy the whole house.
Yeah.
before you're 20 or 21.
Now, Greg, there are young apprentices listening to you right now. What advice would you give them? What's the best advice you've copped along the way that maybe you've passed on to Jordan?
Well, I always tell Jordan, look at the top riders. Look at everything they do. As I said earlier, they don't even got to the top for being lazy or not committed. Pay attention to detail. Have a good work ethic. Back yourself. And don't blame other things for not getting on a horse that you think you should be on. Go get out and get on another horse and beat it. Things like that. Just have a positive attitude and believe in yourself.
The most successful apprentices you look at over the years have come through stables where there's been a fair bit of discipline too.
Yes, correct. Discipline is important. And it's difficult nowadays because a lot of apprentices, it's changed a lot. I mean, I was an apprentice to my boss and lived in the batch out the back, and he had a very tight rein on us. Apprentices now, like my son, lives with another jockey, Dean Holland, and which has been a great asset. Dean's been terrific because not only Dean looks after him, he helps him as well. But it depends, you know. You can only guide them. You can tell them, like the Victorian Jockeys Association, they do all the right things. It's up to the individual. And we hope they come out at the other end.
Now, I dare say one day that was particularly hard was March 31, 2013, where he did have a tumble at Kerrang, which sent him to the sidelines for 2 months. How difficult was that, not just as his mentor, but more importantly, his father?
Yeah. That race wasn't on TV. It was a non-TAB meeting. So I got a phone call from the steward to say that Jordan had had a fall. And the stewards are excellent on that. As soon as they ring the next of kin straight away. And so I didn't get any. There's no one else to give me. You know, I'd seen Jordan had a fall. Have you heard anything? The stewards ring you straight away. They let you know what's happening up to date. Jordan was knocked out, and he did break both his wrists, but he was fine from being knocked out. He recovered, and it was about 6 months after that fall, he had another fall at Hamilton, where Peter Mertens fell in front of him, and Jordan went over the top, and Jordan broke his wrists again.
Okay.
So he's had a couple of falls and broken his wrists both times. And just the other day, he had a fall behind the gates, and the stewards, again, were very quickly to keep me informed. Nothing broken this time, just bruising. But it is scary watching during a race when you know what can happen, and I'm terrible. My wife is, he settled down, he's okay, you know. when he's going for a gap or when there's another horse crowding him, I'm not a good person to watch. To watch him ride, because I know the risks that are involved. When I was riding, I didn't worry about them, so I now can feel what my mum and dad were going through when I was riding.
Boots on the other foot.
You don't think about it. You just go out and you do your job. So you just got to have faith in life and come through the race.
Yeah. Now, Greg, we wish you all the best. He's going terrifically well, and you're actually helping coach young apprentices too these days.
I used to, but not so much now. I have helped apprentices in the stewards' inquiries, and I've represented as an expert witness on different things. I am heavily involved in safety equipment.
Yep.
I designed a horse rider's body protector called the Viper, and we sell that to all pony clubs, we sell it to all horseland stores and saddle world shops, along with the racing supplies throughout Australia and New Zealand, and it's going really well. It's a requirement by law that all track work riders and jockeys wear vests, and my business is going really well. We sell it to about 6 different countries around the world, and it's going very good. So I'm still involved in the industry, but at a different level.
Well, great to catch up this morning, Greg, and we wish Jordan all the best as well.
Terrific. Thanks,
Sean. Thanks, Greg.
Mac.
Thanks a lot, Greg. Greg Childs, good to catch up with him there at 20 past 10, Sky Sports Radio. Danny Beasley, good to see him back in town. He's probably listening to Greg there. And joins us now. Morning, Danny.
Good morning, Sean.
Now, did you ride against Greg at all before you went overseas?
Yeah, no, most definitely. Greg was a great rider, and I have a lot of memories of him. As was spoken about in the interview with riding the great mare Sunline and Norvally, and yeah, he's been a great jockey, Greg, for sure.
Geez, Danny, we all realise we're getting old when he starts talking about his son riding, doesn't he? You realise getting a few miles on the clock, don't we?
Yeah, definitely. It is. You realise how old you're getting when you're starting to ride with children of the jockey that you've rode with previously. I even rode with young Brody Lloyd, Barber, when he rode around the Riverina, Norman. It does make you feel like you're getting on a bit.
Well, you're still riding like a 21-year-old at the moment. You're on a nice Exceed and Excel colt today for Gay Waterhouse. It's trialled well, only had the two runs, and that's Lucky Fish, your first ride.
Yeah, he's a nice horse. He's a big, strong fella, and he's well-related, and he's done everything pretty well. He went down to Kembla the other day, and he ran a nice race. He popped a bit of interference mid-race, but he recovered that and finished off okay. He'll appreciate the 1300, that's for sure, today, and hopefully he can get through the ground, as with a lot of horses going out there today. And as with the last man at Warwick Farm, it just got to a point, the track out there gets that heavy, whatever gets through the ground, the best usually wins, not the best horse.
Danny, Nick Quinn here. He does have more of a sprinting pedigree, but the way he worked home might give the indication that even further than today's 1300 might suit.
Yeah, well, he's by Exceed and Excel, as you alluded to there, but he's actually a half to Hampton Court, which, so that's where he probably gets a bit more stamina than most of the Exceed and Excels. And the way he works and the way he goes about his business, he goes like a horse that will appreciate further distances. So 1300 on this testing track, I'm pretty sure it should be okay for him.
Hopefully you can work home well today and we can stick with him going forward as well. Now, later on in the day, you team up with Tony McAvoy to ride Amarachi, who has been knocking on the door of a win this campaign, is racing really well. Hopefully today can be the day. Worked home nicely, finishing third behind Stylish Lad last start, and never won over the distance, which is a bit of a minor concern, though.
I've rode her last two starts, and she was disappointing the day I rode her at Randwick, but then she bounced back at Kembla and ran a really nice race. So she comes into this race coming off a good run. This is definitely probably the weakest race I've rode her in. And she looks well placed today. As you said, she hasn't won the 1400, but she has won 1550 around Canterbury a couple of times. And I think it's from all reports, it's getting pretty close to her last run before she goes off to stud. So it'd be good to send her out on a winning note.
Now, in the third there, Clary Connors has put you on Flying Kitty. You've drawn out a bit on this, and it's only had one start under its belt, so I suppose it's probably a bit of a learning curve today.
Yeah, I trialled her at Warwick Farm on the heavy ground, and she trialled quite well. She wasn't asked to do a lot, but she done enough. She's a nice little filly that was ready to go to the races, and she's enough that will appreciate the 1300. But I'd say that the race today doesn't look too bad a race.
All right. Tell us a bit about I'm a Special Keeper. Do you know much about it, the Kiwi Red Horse?
Yeah, I rode her at Gosford, and she ran over the 2100 there, and she probably needed the run. She went to the races about 2 weeks later and was scratched at the barrier. She played up in the barrier. I think young Winona was on her. But I've seen her at the track, and she looks really well this mare. She's really improved in her condition, and she's been off a bit from the races, but she does look fit enough. And in a race where there's plenty of chances, she's not the worst.
And in the lucky last year aboard Never Back Down, a horse you've got into the placings at his previous two starts, has only won once in 21 starts, but the owners must be very happy with you because you've given every chance last two starts, just found one or two better, but racing well and could again feature maybe in the multiples.
Yeah, well, he comes out of the race at Canterbury the other day where Bubbles and Boats went along at the same place and won really well, but it backed up its run with a good second last week, so the form's held up, and he handles the ground good, so he's going to enjoy a good run today. He's his other two starts he had drawn out, but today he should just sort of box deep there and he'll get through the ground. So, yeah, he's not the worst either.
Now, obviously, you spent some time away in the last couple of years. Is it great to be back riding on Aussie soil?
Yeah, it certainly is, Nick. It's totally different to Singapore and the whole setup of it all over there. You only go race twice a week, Friday nights and Sundays, but here I seem to be going around nearly most days. But I'm enjoying that aspect of it. And a lot of the big thing here is I don't have to worry about my weight. There's 54 limit. I ride that very, very comfortably. So I can live a pretty normal lifestyle, but do what I love in getting up and riding race horses and going to the races every day.
What was it like riding in Singapore? The heat must have knocked some of those horses about over there.
Yeah, the heat knocks everyone about, that's for sure. And those Sunday meetings where you race during the day, they can be very tough. And especially they still race at the very low weights. The limit weight's 50 kilos. So you had to really manage yourself well, that you didn't have to waste or reduce your weight too much, because if you reduced your weight before the race day would become very, very tough on the body and very taxing. So, it's pretty tough on horse and rider. A lot of horses bleed over there, unfortunately, and that's just through the heat stress of the place. But all in all, it's ran well, and there's a full veterinary practice on course, and the vets there are second to none. They've got vets from all over the world, some of the best, and they do a great job in caring for the horses, that's for sure.
Now, Danny, we'll have to get Racing New South Wales to update their records, because when you click on your name, you come up, you haven't had a ride, and your name's Mr. Kim Endersby.
Yeah, well, I was away for close on 8 years, so you get forgotten pretty quick in this game.
They wiped you completely and renamed you. There you go. What would be the pick of your rides today?
Oh, I'm looking forward to riding Lucky Fish. If you see him in the yard, he's a beautiful horse, and he's got the breeding to go with it. So he's a horse that, even if he doesn't win today, he's a promising horse that I'm sure will be one horse to follow. But probably my best ride, the horse that's well-placed and will handle the ground, will be Amarachi.
Yeah. Well, mate, great to catch up this morning. We really appreciate your time. Good luck today.
My pleasure, and anytime.
Thanks, Danny.
Thanks, Danny. Thanks, Danny Beasley there. Now, they're almost set, race two at Hattrick.
Although only seventh, beating one at the line, was going pretty well at the line. It showed enough to me to include her here. I mean, clearly more experience, and particularly experience on this track, is going to help. But she's out to $11.17 on the tote, and it's a race where I think you can now $12 fixed odds, so we could take a risk, and I'll be prepared to back something like It's a Fish Oil for a rough each way, and I've actually got her in for second ahead of Double Entendre. Then Sedgebrook Charm, who showed a bit last week with some early speed, did get run down in an 18.16, but a similar run might be good enough here to go close. Corborne Legs, 27 start maiden placed in 14 of them most recently, went second on Monday and behind Don't Muzzle Me. Greyhounds to the boxes, race two. Early quaddie gets underway here. This is the Harrison Hiremaster maidens. Forward they go with Brittany Starr in the one. It's official, the three. Sedgebrook Charm in the gold and Consummate Ease in the black. Second line, Sammy Baxter. Led up by Nui Magic, Corborne Legs, and Double Entendre the outside. Here's the favourite, $2.90. Here comes the bunny. We're about set to go. Racing, Double Entendre got away fairly well along with Sedgebrook Charm, and Sammy Baxter showing some speed the inside. Then Consummate Ease, Corborne Legs around the outside. Brittany Starr's got a long way back with It's official and Nui Magic. Up to the corner they come. Sammy Baxter in front. Double Entendre switches out the outside. Corborne Legs down the outside with Consummate Ease. Double Entendre is in and scores the favourite in the second from Sammy Baxter. Then Corborne Legs is followed across there by Consummate Ease. It's official. Sedgebrook Charm finished back in in the pack. Brittany Starr not happy on debut with Nui Magic.
8.26 over the line there. Number 8, double entendre, 260-150. 2 Sammy Baxter, 210. And number 6, Corborn Legs will probably get third and pay $1.90. Danny Beasley, Taylor's his best there, Nick. How are his mounts reflect today on tab.com.au as far as odds go?
Now, plenty of value, actually. So if you do want to follow Danny, you're going to get some nice juicy odds on offer. He did mention that he was most excited about riding Lucky Fish, race 2, number 9. Currently a $12 chance on the fixed odds. Skipping ahead to the Lucky Last, there's been a little bit of a nibble for Never Back Down, who's his ride there, currently